Greetings and welcome to Visions of Horror Episode 2, covering the week of January 8th to the 14th. I mean, formerly the show, I guess, is called Baron Crazes Vision of Horror, and obviously I'm Baron Crazes, your host. We're still working on the title. Again, we have about four different variations of the title, and when you got four people, each one picked one of them. Great. So, we're waiting for a party or something where we start asking people, hey, who's got a title they like for the show? So until we get it figured out, hey, just deal with it. Anyway, it's been another great week of film watching. And it actually became a challenge too, really also for Friday the 13th, how I watch multiple movies. How do we cover which film gets chosen? So it's going to be an interesting little trip down that way, and we'll figure it out as we go along, but hopefully you guys all enjoy it. Do want to give a little shout-out there to the band Ground Meat with the track Pathological Silence. It's a great opening track for us. We like to play. We do have a variation of music we do play on the show for opening tracks. I do also want to state that there was no Baron's Crypt again this week. Really simple reason for this. Last week we were going to do the show. I got hit with some pretty devastating news about a friend of mine passing from pancreatic cancer stage 4. And that really just kind of put me in a tailspin really for a whole week. Guy was a veteran, really great guy in a lot of different ways. And it's just a massive shock to me. So we're going to have the show back next week. We got a lot of news we're going to talk about on that program, a lot of different things. So we'll get into that next week. All right, so as for going back in the week, what I started watching, and this is the best way I can come up with doing this show. I tried doing it daily, but it doesn't feel right. So we had on January 8th, which was a Sunday, The Return of the Living Dead Part 2 from 1988, rated R, an hour and 29 minutes long. And this next little thing is something that a lot of you kind of messaged me about including. So, hey, guess what? Here you go. Is this film an anniversary film? Yes, it is. It's celebrating its 35th year. So, there you guys go for that. We also have, if you go to the horrortimes.com page, down a podcast, you'll find this show. You'll see a link for the Internet Movie Database link so you guys can check this out. Now, I do try my best in giving you the best pronunciation I can think of for the people's names. So sometimes I get it right, sometimes I get it wrong. So, hey, my consistent pattern here is I do like to butcher names. All right, so the director and the writer was Ken Wiederhorn. I hope I got his name right. Starring Michael Kenworthy, Thor Van... This is neat. Lin Jen, Jason Hogan, James Karen, Tom Matthews, Suzanne Snyder, Marsha. I'm just going to spell Marsha's last name. D I E T L E I N. Then it's Philip Bruns, Dana Ashbrook, and Alan Taltman, which, by the way, Alan Taltman is the Tar Man. Just to completely note that to you there. Almost like a play on his name. Anyway, this is a genre of something else you guys wanted was what kind of genre these films are. But this is a comedy horror sci-fi movie put out by Lorimar. That's Lorimar Motion Pictures in 88. And then got a Blu-ray in 2018 from Scream Factory. The summary is, curious kids unearth the barrels that previously helped revive the dead, which proves the second time is an undead charm. Now, it's amazing, this film does get a 5.7 rating. That's not what I would give it. There are some good elements, and there are some, well... We'll get into it, all right? The film came out on the 8th of January. That's when it premiered, and its wide release, if you will, was on the 15th. some taglines for you all. Just when you thought it was safe to be dead. Okay. Kind of playing off of the shark theme there, if you would. If a Nightmare on Elm Street made you scream and Creepshow split your sides, then Return of the Living Dead Part 2 will scare your brain out. Interesting, but really too long. And also, I'm going to come back to that second one in just a moment. They're back and they're not happy. Got an appetite for horror? Then this is your dish. Again, now that second one. Now, what have I always told you guys about taglines? This one does a variation off the tagline secret rule. Now, for those who are not familiar with the secret rule of a tagline, here you go. If you see a tagline that says, from the producer of fill in the blank, starring so-and-so of this, reminiscent of the actor who did this film, anything that's got a name or try to reference a movie title, we're trying to put into your brain a feel-good feeling for you to enjoy this movie. Because we ran out of ammunition. We don't know what to say about the movie because it's just that. So when we're faced with this, we tagline doctors, throw this net out and say, we'll use this. Will make you feel good about A Nightmare on Elm Street, or will make you feel good about Creepshow, so that you want to go with this movie. Go, I remember those movies. I like those films, so I'm going to go back and I'm going to watch these. And reality is, they're nowhere near those movies. Same thing is playing here with those two titles being thrown out. As soon as I saw that, I was like, oh, I see what we're doing. We ran out of ammunition, so we're doing this. And people say, oh my God, Baron, you're telling trade secret. Well, first of all, it's not really a secret because it doesn't take that many brain cells to figure it out. I mean, you can do it again and again and again and again and again. Just look at movie titles, all right? Go look at the taglines. And if you see this, and you all have, you can't go to a theater and you can't go to other places without seeing something like this. It's been done hundreds of times. It's just another ploy that says, hey, we really don't know how to market this film, so we're going to tell you this trick. And when I tell people this trick, they all go with, you're right. And I go, I know, because it's a trick. And it's been played upon you so many times to get your money. And I don't think it's fair. I look at it as a cop-out. As a person who comes up with taglines all the time, the rules are 3 to 5 words, maybe 6, depending if you're using an of and a the in there. But for the most part, your job is to capture their attention, pull them in. Okay? It's not that hard. It's just what a call it. I mean, it's one person would put it, look, it's called fishing. And it's not called catching. You're fishing to hope you get the catch. So, same kind of thing here. We're fishing for you to come watch the film. So we cast out our net, we cast out our lines, we threw the hook out there. But if we got to use this kind of trick to get you into the room to watch it and pay your money, it's not really that fair. Because after a while, people are starting to wise up and they're going to figure out, it's not that movie. All right, moving right along. Some trivia for you. Tom Matthews heavily, thoroughly, wholeheartedly disliked the sequel. People always ask, well, why did he do the movie? I can only speculate. Probably either, I wouldn't say he was under a contract. I would say he probably needed the paycheck. The Michael Jackson zombie that was purely improvised on the spot. However, the makeup to get the character all the way done for the film, for instance, took quite a few hours. So, yes, it may have been improvised, but at the same time, to me, when you improv, it means it's done on the spot. That means that wasn't really done on the spot. Somebody kind of planned that character. You had to get the thriller look down and then throw the character onto the film. So I don't really buy the entire thing of improvised character. Again, no, you know what improvised to me would be? If you had the zombie out there and one of the zombies decided to do a moonwalk suddenly, just arbitrarily out there doing that, now that would be improvised. That would have been something that person decided, hey, you know what? I'm going to do this. So, I don't really buy that kind of trivia thought there. Now, they say here that although they play different characters, Tom Matthews and James Caan, they nearly duplicate their roles from The Return of the Living Dead. The pair are sickened by the zombie gas in both films. They have the exchange, listen, kid, if you like this job, in one moment that gets close to breaking the fourth wall of Matthew's character, Joey even saying, I feel like we've been here before, you, me, them. So, you know, it's a little play on there, yes. To me, though, I still like Return of the Living Dead, the original 1985 film. I like the soundtrack, I like the character, I like the movie, I like the gore, I like everything about that movie. This one, we'll get there in a little bit. Basically, like I said, it is what it is. Now, if you're interested in these things, I got a couple locations for you. I don't know if they're still standing for different reasons and others. You want to be careful because it is a church. So we have, 169 North Baldwin Avenue in Serrera, I don't know, it's Madre, I don't know how to say that, in California. That was Grandpa's house. The Jesse Wilson house, that's in Santa Clara. And then there's the Episcopal Church of Ascension. That was also in California. Again, drive by, take a picture, but don't go inside the church and do anything because that would be considered an act of trespassing. It could be considered to some people a desecration of their faith. So it's one thing if you're going to go sit and listen to a sermon. That's one thing, okay? But it's an entirely different matter, you know, if you're outside on the public sidewalk and you take a picture. So just be aware of that, okay? Some references for you. I decided to do this by going with the franchise. So obviously it follows Return of the Living Dead from 1985. After this film, of course, comes Return of the Living Dead Part 3, which I think is a little bit better than this. That came out in 93, so you can already tell, well, Baron's going to be reviewing, obviously, hopefully, this part two, and he's probably going to be reviewing the part three in the same year. Ooh. Well, that's pretty cool, right? Well, and then in 2005, we had back-to-back sequels, which we really didn't need to have at all. One was called Return of the Living Dead Necropolis, followed by Return of the Living Dead Rave to the Grave. And, we really didn't need either one of those movies. How to put that? That just didn't work well for a lot of different reasons. All right. Let's see here. We've got in this film, which is basically a carbon copy of the first film. That's how I look at it. It's just not, it doesn't have that fun factor, if you would. It's more silly than funny. The script strains for my thing. That is trying to go for the humor, but it just all feels really, really forced. That Michael Jackson thing, just improvised. No, it's not. It's planned. There's a lot of flaws, but the flaws, you can't even say, well, they're just flaws. You can't take the movie seriously. And I know you're saying, well, really can't take any of these movies seriously, Baron. There are some, yes, but no, this you can't. This, you know what really does it in for me? What really starts to become the major problem for the film? Is the two main guys, Tom Matthews and James Karen's characters. What are they doing back? Why are they here? What is going on? I have a lot of problems with that. I just don't like that. They serve no purpose. Look, to me, the film just lacked everything. It just lacked so much. It lacked brains. But it didn't lack brains. Just bad. Anyway, my advice to you, maybe watch Shaun of the Dead or maybe a little bit zombie film if you're looking for a little bit of comedy with it. The movie did have the Monster Mash track in it, and hence we are going to be playing here before our next film. Dead Evil with the Monster Mash, the Bobby Boris Pickett cover track. So enjoy that.
Good evening. I was working in the lab late one night when my eyes beheld an eerie sight. For my muscle from the slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
it's a mash.
Whatever happened to my Transylvania twist?
It's now the Bash. It's now the Monster Mash.
The Monster Mash.
And it's a graveyard smash.
It's now the Bash.
He brought it all in a flash.
It's now the Bash.
It's now the Monster Mash.
Now everything's cool. Drax a part of the band. And my Monster Mash is the hit of the land. For you, the living, the smash was meant to. When you get to my door, tell them Dead Evil sent you.
You can bash.
Alright, so that brings us to Monday, which was January 9th. And the film up on the for my watch list was Leprechaun. Came out in 1993. This is obviously rated R with an hour and 32 minutes long. So this is a kind of film that is in a little of a weird place if you kind of get down to it all. of why I'm watching it. It came out in January, and you're thinking, wait a minute, shouldn't this movie have come out around March? And your answer would be, yeah, it should have, but it didn't. It is what it is. You'll have to give me a minute here as I'm, you know, I got this script on Word, right? And I'm scrolling through it, and my mouse button has, or mouse altogether, has decided to go very funky on me all of a sudden. Nice way of putting it. So, scrolling has become a new challenge in life. Anyway, this film is up for an anniversary this year. It's 30 years old. The director was Mark Jones, who also was the writer. Starring Warwick Davis, Jennifer Aniston, Ken Olandt, it's O-L-A-N-D-T, Mark Holton, Robert High Gorman, and John Sanford. Film was Trimark Pictures in 93 was the theater release. And now, most recently, it was Tubi streaming it. So if it's still available there, there's where you can go. The summary is pretty simple. An evil, sadistic leprechaun goes on a killing rampage in search of his beloved pot of gold. All right, we got three taglines for you. Her luck just ran out. That was available on the TV, the DVD. Then we have the luck of the Irish just ran out. All right. Your luck just ran out. Okay. There you go. Genres, comedy, fantasy, and horror. It's got a 4.8 out of 10. Again, like I said, it was released on January 8th. Some trivia for you. First of all, it's the first film from Trimark Pictures. It grossed nearly $15 million in sales on VHS and DVD formats. Basically, pretty much thanks to the big-time star power. Unfortunately, that wasn't Warwick Davis. No, that obviously is Jennifer Aniston. This is like one of those other kind of movies that happens in people's careers. They go off and do something really big in their careers, and they have a interesting, humble beginning, if you would. So according to Warwick Davis, there were a lot of conflicts between the production and the distribution company Trimark Pictures. The production wanted to make a horror movie with a lot of kind of gory elements, similar to a Friday the 13th or obviously a Nightmare on Elm Street. Well, Trimark wanted something a little bit more like Critters or Gremlins with the horror comedies, suitable for all audiences. So they were looking at the bigger payday than a limited scope, if you would. And hence, certain scenes, and it was edited down and mixed, and it had a little of everything thrown into it. So, you know, it's not exactly a straightforward comedy film, nor is it a straightforward horror film. It's really just got this, I guess the best way to put it is this. Think of a boat on a rough seas. And at one time, the boat dips to one side, and then it dips to another side, and you split the boat down the middle. And you got one side to be comedy, one side to be horror. And it's going back and forth. And what's happening in this, it's really uneven. So some fans like it, some fans don't like it. And it's maybe the reason the rating number kind of goes up and down. However, this film has become a pretty big franchise. For reference, it's followed by, of course, Leprechaun 2 in 94, Leprechaun 3 in 95, which was pretty much going right to video. Leprechaun 4 in space is, I think, where they started to really just go off the tracks completely in 96 there. Leprechaun 5 in the Hood. Oh, boy. In 2000, then we got Leprechaun 6, Back to the Hood, which was in 2003, and then Leprechaun Returns in 2018. For all intents and purposes, I hope only to be reviewing Leprechaun 1 this year. Look, how do I put this nicely? It's not a great movie. It's not a bad movie. It's just a movie. It's kind of cheapish. It's got a B horror movie way about it, so that can make it good or bad for you guys to like. It's one of those movies that is meant to be scary, meant to give you a fright and a chill, but it doesn't. I don't know how to explain it. It just doesn't. It could have been a good creature feature kind of movie, but it lacks that true horror. I mean, you know, I don't know how to explain it. If this feels like a film that's lost at sea and doesn't know where it wants to make port. So it's a movie that you're going to have to really think about if you're going to want to dedicate the time to watch it. It's just that simple. I think most people watch it for the Jennifer Aniston role that she plays in the movie, although she has often discounted this film as her first film. She doesn't even talk about it. And that's really wrong. That just makes people go with, wait a minute, this is your first movie. Yes, you went on to do Friends, but this is your first start. I'm sorry, but that's just how it is. You can't just go with, well, yeah, I did that, but I don't want to count that. As a friend of mine once put it, it sounds like it's like saying, hey, this is when I had my first time. And then, but no. I tell my, significant other, no, you're my first. You have one. You don't have two. Unless you're going to use, as he put it, a different entry point. I was like, interesting way of putting that. So look at it this way, Jennifer, this is going to be considered your other entry point into horror. All right? You don't want to call, hey, it's not my first film. Well, we're all going to call it your first film. You don't want to call it your first real leap into filmmaking? Fine. But it is your first movie. You got to accept it. That's the end of that. All right. So moving us onward. We did this last week and you guys kind of liked it. So we're going to continue a trend here. For every movie, there'll be a track. I think it's something nice to put in. We're going to see how this works out, if we have enough time in the show to do it. Again, we're still trying to find our way with the show, but we just want to get it out every single week. So playing up here is going to be Jamie Rotten Corpse and the Rising Dead with the track Movie Maniacs.
You will pray for death.
Be everywhere, you scream.
Okay, so again, that was Jamie Rotten Corpse, and all the information for the band can be found on the Horror Times podcast section. Again, if you're following along with the screenplay, only if you're following along with the script, you'll be able to find information on the bands as much as we can give you. You will have it all. That brings us to Tuesday the 10th with the film Winter Skin. Now, just to purely note it, we did go and see the film Megan, but I'm going to give you the information here on Winter Skin. Megan is just new into the theaters, about maybe 2 weeks now, doing very well, by the way, very well. But it's a film that I'm either going to be reviewing or one of our other writers, 3C, is going to be reviewing. I think she told me she's going to be reviewing Warm Bodies or something like that. Or she's going to be watching Warm Bodies. Anyway, she may have two coming up this month. We'll have to wait and see. As for my kind of take on Megan, I would say it's an interesting film. The biggest thing about Megan, I will state this much, is that in horror terms, I don't know if the film will be relevant in 5 years from now. Now, let me try to explain that real quick before I go on about Winter Skin. Megan is a technological kind of movie. Okay, so for all you techies, this is a really, really big thing. Yes, it's about the artificial intelligence. So a lot of people go, oh, it's got like a Terminator aspect to it. Yeah, it's got that capability. That is a possibility to be thrown in there. But with technology and how it changes, do I see it falling into the crevice world of, say, Ghost in the Machine or Brain Scan or Fear.com? No, I don't see it going that way. Those films are more of a computer home base world, if you would. It's maybe the reason why people don't get into too much of these what do you want to call them? You know, unfriend or unfriended. These type of Zoom window worlds out there. I think it's a completely different avenue, a different subgenre of the tech horror, which I think could technically start to generate its own subgenre because it could develop that. It's maybe something to look forward to in 5 years or something to see how does this film relate back. Is there truly a tech subgenre? Something to think about. All right, so we're here to talk about, of course, Winter Skin, a 2018 film. It's an hour and 24 minutes long. It has its anniversary, 5 years old. The director and writer was Charlie Steeds. If you remember Charlie Steeds, he has another film out there called Escape from Cannibal Farm, which came out in 2017. All right, it stars David Lentkick, Rowena Bentley, Barrington De La Roche, and Kate Speak. The company that put it out was High Octane Pictures in 2018. And let me see here if I can just enlarge. Just come on, mouse, work with me here. It's always neat when things just don't want to work that well. All right, so the summary for this. Whilst hunting in the snowy wilderness, Billy takes refuge in a seemingly abandoned log cabin when he suffers a shotgun wound to the leg. Inside, kind of kooky and lone inhabitant, an old lady named Angie is keen to nurse Billy back to health. But Billy soon learns this is no ordinary cabin, for he and Angie, I hope I'm getting Angie's last name right there, or name right, excuse me, are stalked into bloodthirsty, skinless creatures that lurk in the surrounding forest, leaving them trapped together inside the cabin to fight to stay alive. Okay, so you're thinking, all right, it's a monster movie, limited plays, kind of claustrophobic. Well, the tagline for the film is "There's something in the snow," kind of a playoff of "There's something in the woods," "There's something in the basement," "There's something in the attic," There's something under the kitchen sink. I mean, you know, you see the theme there, right? Genres is action, fantasy, horror. Now for its what it got on the Animated Database, 3.7. Release date is just a 2018 film. Trivia, Charlie Steeds, also directed in the same year of 2018, The Barge People and The House of the Violent Desire. Just kind of throwing that out there. So he directed these other movies. But I always like to look at it. I always wonder, did he actually direct them? Or did they get released that year? I'm thinking maybe he didn't make these three movies in 1 year. He made them prior, and then he got them all released at the same time. Almost like a three-pick deal, if you would, with High Octane. I don't know that, but it's speculation. All right, so my opinion. Definitely a low-budget film. No question about that. The whole production, sadly, I just want to say it's subpar. It's not up there. It really drags at a certain point here. And I don't know if it's dialogue or acting, a combination of the two. It got so bogged down at one part that I yawned a few times during the movie. And if I start yawning during the film, and please understand, I go over to watch a movie, I'm all in. I get all geared up. Sometimes I have popcorn, some pretzels, you know, but I'm geared in. I'm not on my phone. I'm not doing anything else on the computer. I'm all in. But if I got to start fidgeting in my chair, all right. But if I start yawning during your film, uh-oh. Uh-oh. Not good. Not a good situation in life. It's really hard to tell if, like I said, what's the downfall? But it just seems something feels off. Not maybe amateurish totally, but it's just something. I don't know how to explain it. There's something about the movie that just doesn't. And let me tell you something. The original artwork looks stellar for this movie. The new artwork, I don't even know what it is. It doesn't look good at all. The first one looked really good. It had an element to it. But like I said, when films sometimes get repackaged, they get repackaged and their artwork goes right out the damn door. The story itself is kind of original, if you would. It's unique, you know, about this kind of creature or something that's out there. But then again, it gets to about the middle point, and it just stops. It stops being interesting. It stops moving ahead. It stops everything. It grinds like, you know, if you got a gear, and all of a sudden the gear starts to basically rust up. It's not lubricated right. It's not moving at a good gear. It's just starting to freeze up. And again, I seriously have to keep going back to this dialogue problem in the film. Now, it can be found on Tubi, so if you are curious, that's where you can definitely check it out. You know what? I wasn't a very good one. I'm going to pop it right into another one. Just roll right into it, because it's not that great, and I can't say all the films every day I watch are going to be fantastic. So moving into Wednesday, which would have been January 11th, I watched Beyond Loch Ness. This is a 2008 film, a TV movie. It's rated R. It's 1 hour and 31 minutes long. Yes, it is celebrating an anniversary of 15 years. So the director was Paul Ziller. The writers were Andrew Sands, Paul helped out on the film, and Jason Bourquet, B-O-U-R-Q-U-E, starring Brian Krause, I'm just going to spell this first name here, N-I-A-L-L Matter, Don S. Davis, Donnelly Rhodes, Carrie Genzel, and Amber, I'll just spell Amber's last name, B-O-R-Y-C-K-I. Really don't have a lot of information on a company for you out there, because it wasn't filled in at the time. It says pending. I noticed a couple of things. I went back to the site a couple of times, and a few things said pending, and then I went back, and the pending was gone, as if somebody was updating the film. It was weird. I've noticed that in the past, that things like that do happen. So, you know, let's see here. Let's go back and see if we can try to locate it. Oh, look at that. It actually came up this time. I'll be really honest. I went to tag on this before a couple of times, and it just was have that 404 thing. It doesn't tell you anything. Let's see. Oh, look at this. All the links are working now. That's incredible. It must have been a glitch in the system. So, yeah, it's a sci-fi film distribution that was its original airing. The production companies were Syntech Films Presents. The producer company was Insight Film Studios. Oh, you got to like this one. The other company, Loch Ness Productions. Yeah, uh-huh, okay. Let's see here. For DVD purposes, Sony Pictures Home Entertainment. All right, so, you know, that was weird that the thing came up with a 404. It just sometimes happens. There's nothing you can really do about certain things in life. All right, moving right along. Summary. Oh, my God, someone went crazy with word count. All right, here we go. A mysterious and unstoppable hunter is spreading terror in the once peaceful region around Lake Superior. And no man can survive its swift and devastating attack. As the hungry beast gobbles down the locals one by one, the inhabitants begin to realize the monster not only is hiding in the lake's deep and silent waters, but also there are two of them. Oh, dear God, what are we going to do? Now, nearby, 3 decades after the near-death experience that left him scarred for life, a grisly cryptozoologist named James Murphy arrives in town following a hunch. And if his fears come true, he'll have to face once more this very large nemesis, this scaly creature. Can Murphy reveal the secret of the lake and destroy the beast beyond Loch Ness? Maybe. Possibly. I would think so, or we don't really have a movie now, do we? So, obviously, the genres for this film are going to be action, adventure, comedy, horror. The taglines are, it's hunt or be hunted. Okay. A bone-crushing, gut-wrenching good time. Okay, there you go. Out of the 10 that are possible award points, it gets a 4. So, interesting. The location basically is just some studio used for this. Oh, this is weird. I did have the company name, but it went under a different heading. Oh, that's just messed up. Sorry about that, folks, but it is a live show. Well, not live, it's pre-recorded, but I try to make it as live as possible. So I was like goof somewhere, so forgive me. All right, the film references Jaws with the underwater shots of people swimming to the killer in the water. I really wouldn't put it that far, but okay, I guess when you're grasping at something, Miles will go all the way with it. All right, so in my opinion, how do I put this? Basically, we have not a gentle creature. We have some big 40-foot plesiosaurus type of dinosaur. It likes to waddle its way out of the water, wreck boats, roar like a foghorn. As one person put it, it chases victims. Doesn't do a whole lot after that. And of course, just, you know, doesn't always eat them whole and kind of dismembers them somehow and decapitates them in other ways. And basically, you know, allow for some gory shots, if you can call it that. But yeah, you know, it's just what it does. You can tell it's just a monster, right? Decently entertaining. It was free, so you got that going for you. You didn't have to pay for it. Probably the biggest problem with a lot of people, and I do agree with this, is the CGI work is pretty bad. It's not that good. You know, you can see the animation is so obviously pasted onto the screen. It just really, you want to laugh a lot in this film. Because between the CGI being so poor and the acting, which, look, it tries its best. But, you know, the script isn't very believable. The situations aren't that believable. It really lacks a lot of true value that maybe you find, ooh, I want that richness. It's lacking all that. It's a film that's made to entertain for the period of time that was on the air, and that's it. It's not winning any awards, which it could be good. They didn't win any Razzies. But, you know, it's just what it is. All right, so be aware of that for your, I don't know, your entertainment value time. I don't know what else to tell you there, guys. It's just what it is. All right, again, not a great movie, and it can be found on Plex and Tubi. All right, so how about we play a little music right now? Let's reach in here. You know, since we played... or not play, but since we talked about Return of the Living Dead Part 2, and we did talk briefly touching on Return of the Living Dead from 1985, the original, how about I pull out something here called Burn the Flames, which is a cover track of Worky Orkinson's music by the band Others. So enjoy this track.
We'll be right back.
The movie for Thursday, which was January 12th, was really a special film. When I saw it on the list, I just was like, oh yes, can't wait to watch it. That movie was The Creeping Flesh from 1973. Rated PG, an hour and 32 minutes long. Anniversary, hell yes, 50 years. That's right. The director is Ferdy Frances, or was, I should say. The writers were Peter Spenceley and Jonathan Rumble. Starring, now this, the first two names is what really just sells the whole thing, okay? Christopher Lee, Peter Cushing. Okay, I'm done, really. I mean, at that point, that's it. You're sold, right? A couple others, of course, would be Lorna Helbron, Duncan Lamont, and Michael Ripper. Face it, with a name like Ripper, you'd have to be doing only horror movies. I mean, I don't think you could technically go, yes, let me do some Disney movies. Yeah, just that kind of name, right? So the company was Tygon Pictures for the UK theatrical release and Columbia Pictures for the US. Now, as for a summary, well, here we go. A scientist comes to believe that evil is a disease of the blood and the flesh of the of a skeleton he has brought back from New Guinea contains a pure form of it, pure evil. Convinced that his wife, a dancer, if you would, went insane, manifests this evil, and is terrified that it will pass on to their daughter. He tries to use the skeleton's blood to immunize against the eventual insanity, if you would. But let's just say his attempt is anything but a true good desire of what he was seeking. It's a strange movie. Yes, the concept of his hypothesis is bizarre, to say the least, that if evil does exist in its purest sense, that it's still going to be in the bones of what something was, that's curious enough. What also comes in this film, and what I always remember from this movie, is when they spill some water on the skeleton and it starts to grow back veins and arteries, flesh starts to go onto it. I always remember that. That, to me, was some kind of scene. I remember, I don't know where I was, how old I was. I don't remember anything like that. But I remember seeing that scene and I thought, oh, wow, that's cool. And it hooked me. And me even sitting here right now, I just saw the film again. And it brought back a slew of memories for me. It really did. Wonderful trip down memory lane for myself. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I think, look, some people will, you know, piss all over the, what do you call it, the summary of this movie. And that's always going to happen. You can't make everybody happy. Let's face it, you can't. It's impossible. But for the diehards out there, they're going to like this movie. There's, you got Lee and Cushing. Come on. So, taglines. Here we go. Spine chilling. That's it. Okay? Beware the skeleton with creeping flesh that rises from the dead. It's good. We didn't need all that information. We know this film is called Creeping Flesh. We get that. You know, we could have just gone, beware of the skeleton. That's what I would have put down. Beware of the skeleton. So what would that tell you if you went with mine? Beware of the skeletons. Four words. It tells you, okay, I should be aware of something. When I see the skeleton, that's my focus. That's what I should be aware of. You know, there you go. You could say, evil exists in all. All right, evil exists in all. Some form of it does exist. We always say that. That's a philosophical thought. So you can have that. But here's two others they use. More frightening than Frankenstein, more dreaded than Dracula. Oh, God, there we go again. We're pulling from other movie references. We're going to tell you, here's these films. Let's do this. And then the last one, a terrifying journey through the nightmare worlds of evil, insanity, and terrible revenge. Well, isn't all revenge terrible? I mean, you're revenging something. Of course, you could have revenge and avenge. It's two interesting words. But the entire sentence is just too long. I mean, you got... I'm looking at it here, and what are we talking about? 8, 12, 13 words long? I mean, come on. It's just too wordy. I found it. Think about this again. A, terrifying journey. Okay? All right. Through the nightmare worlds of evil, insanity, and terrible revenge. It just goes on too long. You're feeling that pulling you down. No. That doesn't work. All right, moving right along. Here we go. So the genres are obviously horror and sci-fi. Our ratings for the Internet Movie Database, we got a 6.2. Release date for this was actually January 1st, 1973. A way to kick off the year. For those who are curious, the Thorpe House in England, I guess, I'm not trying to read all this, it's just too complex to understand exactly where it is, but Thorpe House, this is the Hilder House, H-I-L-D-E-R-N House. So it's a house that was used as one of the settings. And you guys from England, because I know this show does get broadcasted there, it goes everywhere, obviously, but we do have a pretty large following in Europe, especially for this show, and this is just our second one. Our first one really went off the charts. I want to thank everybody in the European Union out there for enjoying this the show. Thank you for all the wonderful comments. I know you're thinking, wow, he didn't say anything. I was waiting. I want to thank everybody. They saw the rating numbers. Fantastic. After one show. So hope you guys are really tuning in and finding this to be something of interest to you all. All right, some trivia for you. Freddie Francis took over directing from Don Sharp on very short notice. If you're curious why, you're going to have to wait for the actual review that I'll be writing. The theatric movie here was the last of George Benson, who played Waterlow in the film. Again, you know, people do die shortly after things get made. It's always the way. It's how life goes on. It references the movie The Skull from 1965, and my opinions are going to be really great for you all on this one. It's got a lot of memorable moments. I think I've pretty much stressed that already. It's got this diabolical skeleton. It's got the really interesting figures. It's really rich in some gothic settings. And, of course, the atmosphere, too, is fantastic. What else can I tell you? You know, is it about a story about the nature of evil? The skeleton, you know, background, how's the originality to it? Does the skeleton have these kind of weird plans? You know, I would actually have to put down perhaps the skeleton of this pure evil is in a weird way a different adaptation of Who Goes There? You know, the book that was used for The Thing. That this thing is inherently evil. This thing has wasted away. Now, of course, if water brings it back to life, so to speak, then it would have had to been at a space of time where it was absent of water, even rainfall. So, you know, there's a lot of questions that you could come up with if you wanted to go down the rabbit hole, so to speak, of tearing down the film. But it could be an interesting aspect of that. Some would say maybe from a religious standpoint, you could say the water is a form of for life. and that in evil and in darkness and in the lack of water is the thirst. So even if you drank water, it would never quench your thirst, or that by drinking the water, it just makes you more parched. You never get to have it. So is this an evil that is from hell itself, absent of something? So there's a lot of different ways you could go about diving into this. I think the biggest question really comes down to insanity. What breeds it? Where does it come from? And in here, he's thinking it's in the blood. Well, you know, if it's in the blood and we're doing blood transfusions, then we're really screwed, aren't we? So there's a lot of different aspects of that. Obviously, I think the hypothesis that was being used should have been given a little bit more credit to explore. A lot of times in the sci-fi movies, I found that if you take a little bit more time to go through them, you're going to find out a lot more essence. It's like, look, later this year, I'll be reviewing War of the Worlds from 1953. And pretty early in that film, I've got a question to ask, and I'm going to already researching it to see if I can find the solution to a very interesting question I have about the entire plot of the movie. But that's, you know, that's here or there. These films, you have to have this essence of having, I think what really goes for a lot of people, besides the sound and the storyline, is that plot. Does it make sense? Is it believable? Can you bring us along where we will suspend our disbelief long enough to enjoy your 90-minute movie? I don't think so. If you're not a Peter Cushing or Christopher Lee fan, if you're not those, this film may not appeal to you as much. If you're not into the gothic settings and atmosphere and those kind of overtones into it, then this is not going to appeal to you. But if you are into that, then this is going to be something that I think you will definitely enjoy. It's right now something you can find on Prime and Tubi, so be aware of that. With that being said, I do want to play a track here from Bloody Hammers called Welcome to the Horror Show. You know, I heard this track, and it really made me think about horror movies in a lot of ways. And, of course, the one we just played. And I hope you guys enjoy it. And we'll be back with our Friday the 13th.
Load your guns and tell the truth. Leave me here.
All right, so welcome to what was Friday the 13th. Actually, in 23, we have two Friday the 13ths. Obviously, we just celebrated our first. And our next one comes in October. So it's going to be a pretty cool month already for October. All right, so on this day, I actually watched a grand total of four movies. I know, one of those days, right? So to cover this correctly, did watch Friday the 13th 1, 2, and 3. And probably by tomorrow, the part 3 review will be up on the site. I wanted to get it done last year, but again, things did happen. But look at that. I got it done, and it's in there. So you guys are listening today on Saturday, the 14th. You guys will be able to read the review for tomorrow. All right. Now, let's talk about what film I'm going to cover here. It's called Sweet 16. This is a 1983 film. And let's see, what can we tell you about here? It's rated R. It's about an hour and 30 minutes long. It is a 40-year-old film. Director was Jim Sotos, S-O-T-O-S, with the writer being Erwin Goldman. It starred Bo Hopkins, Susan Strasberg, Patrick McNee, Don Stroud, Dana Kimmel, who was also in Friday the 13th Part 3, so kind of interesting how I tied that together for you all. Don Shanks, Michael Pataki, Michael Cutt, and Logan Clark. The company that put it out was Century International in 1983. Then in 2015, it got a Blu-ray release from Code Red DVD and can be found currently on Tubi streaming service. Now, as for a summary, we have teenager Melissa moves into a small town filled with racial prejudice and bullying. Each time she meets up with one of the boys in town, they end up murdered. But who is the killer? So this movie is obviously a crime horror mystery movie. It's not too hard to figure out who the killer is. It doesn't make it impossible for anybody to get to that point. But we have some taglines. So first up is, why are all the boys dying to meet Melissa? I like it. It's got a little air to it, right? And then there's, what terrors are unleashed when a girl turns sweet 16? Okay, interesting. I see we're getting a little play on here of the sweet 16 and such, as a 16 candles is amazing. It, you know, kind of themes here that are playing together. But needless to say, there you guys go. It's got a 5.1 out of 10. Release date for this was, believe it or not, it was the 13th in Greenwood, South Carolina. Now, a little bit of trivia. This was the final film of Henry Wilcoxon, who passed away in March of 84. And this was his only horror film. And Patrick McNee replaced Leslie Nielsen, who was forced to withdraw from the film because of a scheduling conflict. So that gives you a kind of an insight there of who he's replacing. A guy with great comedic chops, but maybe at that time in his career, was still more into the dramatic roles. Now, as for how I found this film, I think it's got a very good atmosphere. And while it is a slasher, it's not gory. So take that for you, what you want there. But I definitely would say it's more murder mystery. It's not like again, the identity of the murderer is pretty obvious, of course. But it's effective. And if you go into this with the woke mentality, so to speak, you're not going to like the movie. And in a way, maybe you shouldn't like the movie for some certain aspects of it. And the film is not praising those. It's just saying, hey, this is what there is. Now, Gorehounds of our slasher genre there, or subgenre, just saying, they're not going to like this. Okay? They're just not. This has got... it's well-paced, but the setting, the atmosphere, these are things that are not going to appeal to the slasher mindset. Now, I do want to mention that I did see this film, this is going back about 3, maybe 4 years ago. I think it was Bloody Disgusting put this movie out in a month of October. I think they did it with a double header. I don't remember what the second film was. Maybe it was one of the Amityville movies, like Evil Escapes or something. Anyway, this film came out. It was really cool to see it up on the big screen, which is always a nice thrill. If you missed that, I'm sorry to say that, but hey, it was a good time. Obviously, well before anybody thought of, hey, here's COVID. So it was a good movie. Wasn't a lot of people in the audience. It came out, I think, during a weekend thing in October. So we're really going back there by some distance. Again, it's a film that's found on Tubi. And if you have some time, you should give it some love and let you yourself enjoy it. All right. You hear me not talking about the Friday 13th movies. Why? Because everybody else talks about them. Everybody else put it on the podcast. Everybody, you've got to be saturated by now with all of it. So I'm like, no. I mean, I had an opportunity to do a show, and I could have done some music and things. But why? We got a one coming up in October. I'll just do it then. Besides, it'll be more fitting for it then, too. All right. So moving us into our Saturday show, which I actually watched here today, earlier, obviously, about maybe 1 o'clock in the morning. But before I get there, I'm going to play, you know what? I'm going to save the track and play it at the end. How's that? Since we've only been basically on the back on the air for about 7 minutes. So here we go. Saturday the 14th, a lot of people do watch the movie Saturday the 14th from 1981. I did, so you guys, when you get to see the Vision of Horror for the month of January, you're going to see Saturday the 14th. Why? Why not? It just makes sense to watch it, so you have to. All right, we have the film Ghost House from 1988. This is rated, it's not rated. It's 1 hour and 35 minutes long. Anniversary? Yes, 35 years old. The director is Umberto Lenzi. And in this particular, for this film, he actually went under the name Humphrey Humbert. And, you may be familiar with Umberto's films, namely the one that's called Cannibal Ferox from 1981. The writers are Sheila Goldberg and Cynthia McGavin, starring Laura Wendell, Mary Sellers, Donald O'Brien, Greg Rhodes, and Willie M. Period Moon. I know you're saying, Baron, why did you give Willie a little nod there? It's going to come up, and we have to talk about it, so I might as well let you know now. The companies involved in this movie, if you want to call it that, is Neversoft Entertainment, which really sounds like a porno name, doesn't it? Neversoft, or something that you think should come out of a James Bond type of movie. It just the name alone. This was the worldwide video release of it. Then it was Chapman Entertainment in 88, which gave it another wide release. And Scream Factory in 2015 with a Blu-ray. The summary is visions of a deceased girl and her doll bring doom to the visitors of a deserted house. Yeah, that's kind of true if you want to go that way. I wouldn't see anything wrong with that. It is that. Now we got three taglines. Here we go for them. We've got, we dare you to go inside. For God's sake, save us. Death holds the mortgage, and if you move in, they'll be held to pay. Okay. All right. Interesting. I don't really like that last one. Doesn't really sell it. Well, you said the mortgage. I figured I might as well go with a selling joke, right? All right, so the genres for a horror mystery thriller, out of the 10 possible stars you can get on the Internet Database, you find out that this film got a 4.8. Now, the film's location for it was the Ellis Estate House up in Massachusetts. This is for the house exteriors. For you guys out there, it is the same location as Lucio Fulci's House by the Cemetery, which was, let's face it, I think a superior film to this movie. Also, if you're curious, the funeral home was known as the Edward J. Gaffey and Sons Funeral Home, located up in Massachusetts. So if you're in the Massachusetts area and you want to go find these things, you can. We'll have the links for the, at least the, what they are on the Horror Times page. You guys should definitely check them out. If you're going to go to either one, please, please, please be aware that these may be, I'm not too sure if the house is occupied by a, is owned by the town, the state, or is private, so be aware of that. The funeral home is obviously going to be a business. Don't go in unless you're buying. And basically just stand on the sidewalk if you want a picture and take the picture. Don't fly the drone overhead. Don't do anything stupid. Don't be a jackass about it. Just be respectful. All right. So I already told you the trivia that the house is the same thing as Lucio Fulci's. Little reference for you is followed by Witchery from 1988 and Beyond Darkness from 1990. Now, I do want to mention one other little piece of information. The film is known in Italy as La Casa 3. Now, just so you're understanding, I just told you the movie is followed by two other films. It's not preceded by any. So what the hell happened? I will explain. From basically a friend of the filmmakers suggested that they call it La Casa 3, the playoff of Evil Dead and Evil Dead 2, which in Italy, the films were released as, you got it, La Casa 1, La Casa 2. So when Witchery and Beyond Darkness came out, they got labeled as La Casa 4 and La Casa 5. Now, this is really low down dirty because people start thinking they're all linked together and they're not. But let's face it, that's done over here in the United States too. It's been done with other movies, the Demons movies. They had some of this kind of play on there. The word Amityville, look at that one. That thing has been linked to so many different things. It's no longer Amityville Terror or House or anything. It's been, the name Amityville has been taken and used for everything you can possibly imagine. I don't think it hasn't been used for was an adult movie. But don't worry, it'll get there eventually. There's no question about it, right? But, you know, have to understand, this happens a lot. The movie The Conjuring, all right? We got The Conjuring from Beyond. We got The Conjurer. These people are using the title to, you know, entice people who may not be aware of that these films have no connection to their main staple franchise pieces. And that's what happens. So I want you to be aware of that. And I'm especially saying this because, again, we got fans here in the United States that are really big into foreign horror. And if they didn't know any better, they see the word La Casa and they're thinking, oh, this has got to play together with the other two movies. And they start linking it together and they don't go together. So, you know, be aware of that factor. I just want to put that out there. I'm sure it'll be also right up here for you all to know. that we, I think we'll probably by the end of the day or by tomorrow, we'll have the review up for Ghost House on the Horror Times. So you guys will be able to check that out. You know, just speaking of that, you may have noticed there, I've talked about a couple of films that are on the Vision of Horror that you guys will see the full list in the very beginning of February. You start seeing is, hey, wait a minute, Barron's reviewing the actual films that are on the list while adding some films onto the list from last year that he wanted to get done, but he didn't. This is getting interesting. Barron is coming back, it sounds like. That's right. I'm coming out of the shadows. I'm stalking my prey. I'm house hunting to make your life a living hell. Well, when you got enough ghosts in your house like I do, hey, I probably got one on my left and one on my right, and one's probably sitting in the corner just looking at me going, I like it. I like it. I'm for it. Keep going. At least my ghosts in the house seem to be friendly right now. Not really doing anything too bad, and I thank them for that. All right, so look, it has gore. It has somewhat of a plot. A lot of scenery. Put it that way. The prologue of the film is really great. We got this young Henrietta, young Henrietta. She's got her doll, which looks like a giant court jester type of doll or clown. You would find them in Poltergeist. She butchered the family cat, and she's kind of locked in the cellar. It's kind of cheesy. Not so creepy, if you would. There's some unusual things that do occur in there. It's got some silly decision-making. And as for Mr. Moon, I don't understand his role. His character is Pepe, P-E-P-E. And, I mean, his role is truly bonkers. Not bonkers in a good way. Bonkers in what the hell is his purpose in this film? I mean, you really don't find any interest of it. Every time he's on the screen, it's just more, ugh. It's more of a groan, a cringe, a shrug, a head turn away. I don't understand his role. His role doesn't make any sense. I mean, at first I thought, well, maybe they brought him in as a doomsayer, but he's not that either. He's an annoying pest. I mean, I'll be very honest with you. He dies, and I don't think there's a person around who doesn't go with, oh, thank God we can rejoice, he died, yay. I mean, it's just that kind of guy that in the film you're just like, I don't get it. I really don't understand that. But you guys should enjoy the review. I'm hoping to have more up this coming week. I will let you know that on our 19th, which is a Thursday, I'm going to be watching The Raven from 1963 very early in the day. That's just because I got some things I got to do, and I figured out a way to get the film in before I have to go and do things I don't want to go and do. But that's life, and you got no choice. Anyway, I want to tell you we're going to play out three pieces of music before we close out our show for tonight. And those bands are going to be Envenomed with the track Horror Movie. This is a Skyhooks tribute track featuring Red Simons. Also, we've got two tracks by demand of fans for Nimvid, with the first track being That Girl, followed up by Killing Saturday Night. Well, obviously, it is Saturday. It is nighttime now. That's when this show went off the air, or not off the air, but I guess on the air, and you guys finished it out. So, hope you enjoyed the show. We do thank you for liking us, and please take the time to like us on Facebook at the Horror Times Facebook page. Be sure to like the Barron's Crypt page also on Facebook. You can even like me. I like to have people following me too on the Facebook. You can go to the horrortimes.com page. Scroll to the bottom, see podcasts. You will find show number 2, which is week 2. And again, we're still working on the title. Right now, I think we're going with Baron Krause's Vision of Horrors, week two show here. So if that's what stays and that's what it sells as, great. If we change it around, that's fine too. It's what you, the fans, like to hear. So maybe you can give us some feedback. We'll definitely enjoy to hear that on the Facebook page. Otherwise, hope you have a safe week. Remember, stress does get up there, but you can always turn to horror as a great way to release that stress and have a good time. With that being said, enjoy watching the horrors.
Care who's gonna lose or win. Listen to this and I'll tell you something.